Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Star Entertainment Group Half Year Results 2017 conference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. At which time, if you'd like to ask a question, you'll need to press star one on your telephone. I'd now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Matt Bekier. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Tara. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for dialing in to discuss our first half results. I'm joined here today by our CFO, Chad Barton. Let me turn you to page number four of the presentation and touch on some of the highlights of the first half. Top of the page, we've obviously reported strong actual results. Our statutory EBITDA of 300 million dollars is up 56% on the previous period, but down to 14.5% on a normalized basis. We think these are strong, clean results because in those numbers, we've been able to absorb a number of sort of unusual events without making any adjustments for them, and I'll touch on some of these things as we go through the numbers. We are quite pleased with that, with that first half in the context of the environment that we're operating in under. It's fair to say that the disruption and the softer domestic revenue and the softer international revenue that we've experienced, that's really been supported by a good expense performance. Our expenses are up only 2.9%, so I think that's a strong sign that we've responded quickly to the market conditions. In this first half, we've made significant investments in our two largest properties, in particular in Sydney and the Gold Coast, which has created some disruption. I think in that context, it is pleasing to see that the domestic business is quite resilient despite this disruption. So domestic gaming revenue is down 0.7% on the PCP and non-gaming, with significant capacity reduction down 3.2%. The international VIP business had positive growth in front money, up 4.4%, but turnover is down by 11.9%. That is largely due to the very strong win rate that we've experienced, and I'll talk about that later on, which meant that customers lost money very quickly and didn't turn their front money as much as they would have in the past. What is pleasing is to see that in the domestic business, now that the disruption's behind us and the capacity has returned onto the floor, our momentum is returning. So for the first 6 weeks of this financial year, we're reporting revenues that are up 11.4% in the domestic business. In the international business, the trends of the last couple of months of the first half continue into the second half. I can't be much more precise because the timing of Chinese New Year kind of makes the direct comparison a little bit hard. The board's declared a dividend of 0.075. That's up 36%, and our balance sheet continues to be in good shape on the back of the strong financial results. Let me ask you to turn to page number six, where we start to discuss the performance of each property. The Star in Sydney, as I mentioned, went through a period of investment. We have statutory EBITDA of 188 million dollars, up almost or more than double on the previous period, and normalized EBITDA down 25%. The domestic revenue impacted by the disruption I referenced, so we expanded the Northwest Gaming. We built some additional bars. We refurbished all of the hotel rooms. That's translated into negative slots growth of 2.6%, resilient tables of 4.2%, and negative non-gaming revenues of 7.4%. During that period, we saw customers still visiting the property, so visitation was up 2.8%, but the spend per customer, particularly in slots, was down because the environment just wasn't that amenable. And when we look at the playtime, we see quite clearly that it was the playtime that was impacted by these customers. If I can ask you to turn over to Queensland, we see a similar story. Queensland has statutory EBITDA of 112 million dollars, which is up 10%, and normalized EBITDA up 9.5%. So what that is really showing is that a relatively small growth in absolute terms of the VIP business in Queensland has made quite a big difference to the normalized result. And if you look at Queensland property by property, Brisbane started the year strongly, but then was exposed to some of the competitive investments that were made by some of the clubs around it, and the growth then sort of reversed in the second quarter. Gold Coast was impacted by disruption, you know, the room refurbishment as well as the lobby, the building of additional restaurants. That's now all behind us. The international VIP business that I mentioned, that growth was really driven by a couple of rooms that we were VIP rooms that we built 12 months ago. And what we're trying to do now is deliberately bring more and more events for VIPs and tournaments up to the Gold Coast to expose the property, now that it starts to look very attractive, expose the property to these customers. So when the new facilities open up in 10 months' time, we have customers who know what they can actually expect because they can see this, the new tower emerging. They've seen the quality of the food and beverage and the hotel rooms. So it's a deliberate strategy, and we're pretty optimistic about that. If you turn over the page to page number 8, we show you the EGM market share. And for the first time in quite some time that we see a reduction in market share in Sydney and in Brisbane, and Jupiter's is flat on prior period. There's really three reasons that have driven that. The first one is, I mentioned already, fewer machines on the floor because of the refurb. So we're down 3% in the Gold Coast and 5% in Sydney in that first half. Second, disruption. So even the machines that were out there on the floor weren't being used as much as for as long as they were being used in the 12 months ago. And then third, it's the implementation of our loyalty program, which has created a bit of noise in the numbers. What I mean by that is the new loyalty program, which we implemented in the first week of November, gives our customers a lot more choice. It's a far superior program to the old one, and that means that customers, particularly top-tier customers who had accumulated a lot of points, who in the past essentially could only redeem these points for food and beverage, we're now being able to are now being given the flexibility to redeem that for other benefits, particularly gaming benefits. And so there's a lot of free play that slushed through the system in November and December. It's pleasing to see that now in January, February, the balance has been restored, so points into the system equal points out of the system. So that effect is behind us, and the current trading gives us a sense of how the business is actually trading and how customers are responding. If I can now ask you to turn to page number 9, where we discuss the VIP business. Our VIP business had a very interesting first half. Front money, as I mentioned in the introduction, was up 4.4%. But unlike last year, where we had a freakishly bad win rate, we had an unusually good win rate this time around. We had a win rate of 1.62% with a very pronounced pattern of rapid loss. That meant that our turns were down from 14.4 times last year to 12.2 times, so 18% down. So on the same amount of front money, our turnover was down 18% just because of the turns. And the way we normalize, that means our normalized revenue and our normalized profits are coming down. If you want to put some value around that, you know, the turns and the adjustments to commissions, which are higher because of our win rate, is about a $20 million impact on normalization. And I'm getting the evil eye here from my team. I'm not going to reopen the normalization debate. I'm just saying that it had a significant impact in the first half. The second significant impact on our results has obviously been the detention of the Crown employees and the greater caution that has triggered in the market. And you see that because in the first 4 months of the first half, our revenue was only down by 4.2%, but then in November and December, we were down 27% on the PCP. So clearly that has had some impact. We've been able to moderate the impact on North Asia through the strategy that we had started some 12 months ago. You may recall that 12 months ago, we articulated a strategy of diversification where we said our target flying formation for this business will be to generate 25% of revenues out of Southeast Asia, 25% of revenues out of premium mass, and only 50% out of North Asia. So the investments we made last year into recruiting these teams are now paying back, and we're generating very pleasing growth. It's not yet big enough to fully offset the negative impact of North Asia, but it's clearly helping us to mitigate the impact. And we are positive and look forward to further driving this diversification strategy. One more point just on the performance of this VIP business is the last bullet point on the on this page. Our net receivables are down on previous on the prior period, and that is a fantastic result. So, if practically 12 months ago, when our customers were winning, we were writing a lot of checks, and so collecting wasn't a huge deal. This half, we had to collect a lot of money, and we did that and kept our receivables book clean. So there's a huge credit to our team, credit and collections team, who've done a fantastic job in this part of the business and has continued to keep a very clean book. So I'm very pleased with the performance in the circumstances of the division. I now want to hand over to Chad to take you through the numbers.
Thanks, Matt. Good morning, everyone. I'm just on slide 11 here. As Matt's already highlighted the resilience of our business, we've actually taken, with a half, been impacted by a number of unusual factors, all of which are reflected in our P&L above the line and not normalised out. So on a statutory basis, group revenue is up 11% and EBITDA is up 56%. On a normalised basis, group revenue is down 4% and EBITDA down 14%. Domestic revenue has declined 0.7%, impacted by lower slots availability due to disruption, increased free play from loyalty, and a lower hold rate in domestic tables. Normalised IRB revenue has declined 11%, impacted by market uncertainty following the Crown detentions. Non-gaming revenues declined 3.2%, given the lower room availability.
Looking at costs, gaming taxes, levies and commissions on a statutory basis were flat on PCP. Gaming taxes, levies and commissions on a normalised basis were 4% lower due to lower IRB volumes. Our normalisation does not include adjusting for commissions or doubtful debts. Operating costs increased 2.9% and remain well controlled. This increase includes additional investments in the loyalty program relaunch, marketing costs, additional capability added to the group, and wage indexation. Earnings per share are up strongly, supporting an interim dividend of 7.5 cents per share, a 36% increase on PCP. Now turning to the balance sheet, I'll just touch on some of the key movements in the balance sheet between 30th of June to now. So cash collection remains solid at 96% of EBITDA. Cash increased 23% on last financial year end to fund the purchase of the Sheraton Grand Mirage on the Gold Coast. Trade receivables decreased $28 million on financial year end due to continued effective credit risk management processes and lower volumes in our international business in November and December. Net trade receivables past due, not impaired balance, was $29 million, down $4 million on June 2016, with over 90% of the balance less than a year old. Investments in associates increased $116 million, relating to investments with our partners Chow Tai Fook and Far East Consortium in Queens Wharf, Brisbane, and initial amounts regarding the Sheraton Mirage acquisition. I'll discuss CapEx and net debt on the following slides. Slide 13, we talk through our funding. As you can see there, gearing remains conservative at 1.1 times net debt to 12-month trailing statutory EBITDA. Net debt increased $196 million to $670 million, primarily due to increased capital expenditure and Queen's Wharf Brisbane equity contributions. We have undrawn bank facilities of $228 million at the half, with an average maturity of 2.6 years. We continue to be fully drawn on our long-term USPP facilities, as well as our short-term working capital facility. We are utilising the working capital facility as it is the cheapest funding source of debt. Net interest expense in the half was $21 million. On slide 14 on CapEx, the group have made good progress on our capital investment projects across all properties. This chart on slide 14 puts CapEx for FY17 in context, and this chart excludes our Queen's Wharf Brisbane contributions. Our level of investment in the first half is not dissimilar to 2011, when the group had a much smaller earnings base. This half saw increased capital expenditure of $216 million, our highest half to date. $158 million of which relate to growth projects delivered or underway at the Gold Coast and Sydney, and $58 million in maintenance. As Matt will run through later, disruptive capital works in Sydney and the Gold Coast will reduce in the second half, with our expectations that full-year CapEx will be in the range of $375 to $425 million, plus an additional $120 million for Queen's Wharf equity contributions. As announced in January, we have invested $40 million in the Sheraton Mirage Hotel in Brisbane through a joint venture with our Queen's Wharf Brisbane partners. Depreciation and amortisation of $76 million was 8% below prior year due to some accelerated depreciation last financial year. Full-year D&A is expected to be between $165 and $170 million. So just in concluding for myself, on slide 15, we set out the key financial metrics since 2012. The group has achieved a statutory net profit after tax growth of 15.1% compound annual growth rate over the last 5 years. Our financial position and balance sheet remain strong to enable the continued execution of our strategic growth plans, highlighted by our gearing and interest coverage improvements over the last 5 years. And we have continued to reward our shareholders with 15% compound annual growth rate on our dividends. I'll now hand back to Matt, who'll cover off the outlook and priorities.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm on page number 17. The priorities for our company remain the same, and they're really an expression of our long-term strategy, which has two legs. One is to continue to improve our operations. And we do that in terms of our efficiency, in terms of our customer service, and in terms of the offer that we continue to bring to our customers. The second leg to that strategy is the physical expansion of our offering through capital investments in our properties. One little extension to that strategy has been the acquisition of the Sheraton that Chad has referenced. The way you should think about that is, you know, it is a short drive away from Jupiter's and the Gold Coast Jupiter's and Brisbane. And in Brisbane, Queen's Wharf will generate some 1.4 million additional room nights. This asset, which is one of the really scarce, large-scale beachside resorts in Australia, this asset will allow us to put a bigger offer, broader offer to our customers and extend their stay in our markets. That's how you should think about that investment. On the current performance of the Sheraton, it covers our cost of capital, but we're really excited about what that property can do in our network, and what we can do through deliberate additional investments to further lift the performance of it. So don't expect any deviation from that strategy. Don't expect a large-scale acquisition of hotels. We're really looking here to round out the property, the offer to our customers in our core markets. The second point on page number 17 deals with trading in the first 6 weeks of this financial, of the second half. So we're a quarter of the way through, and we've seen a nice recovery from the PCP, which really, I think, highlights that our analysis that disruption is the main driver of the first half's performance in the domestic business. It gives us some confidence that that analysis is correct. What is pleasing about that start to the year is that it's broad-based. We're seeing recovery in Queensland as well as in New South Wales. We're seeing recovery of electronic gaming, food and beverages up, tables are up. So it's a pretty broad-based, solid number, and we're pleased with that. As we sort of look at the remainder of this first half, disruption to the extent that it still exists is will continue to reduce. And so there's some hoardings coming down, some elevators and escalators being commissioned. The property will just get incrementally better. The properties will just get incrementally better as the year progresses. And then even as you think as we think ahead to the property development plans of the second and the first half of next financial year, we don't really see any massive disruption coming down the pipe. It's a little bit of subject to how quickly we can get planning approvals here in Sydney, but most of what is now coming is outside the footprint, in the medium term, is outside the footprint of the operating entities, which gives us some confidence about the trading. I should also say loyalty has now been in. We continue to refine it and improve it, but the big dilutive effect of the redemption is behind us, so that is a positive, and we're looking forward to implementing some additional systems that allow us to further enhance our jackpotting and bonusing strategy over the coming years. So pretty, happy with where we started the year, and I'm looking with a reasonable level of confidence into the future. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our formal presentation. I'm happy to take any questions you might have at this point.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you need to cancel that request, please press the pound or hash key. Our first question comes from the line of Mark Wilson from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Matt. Was just wondering if you could discuss the relaunch of loyalty and just sort of look at the impact in that period. You know, firstly from a cost perspective, and then the impact of, you know, have you been able to quantify the impact of free play, and just how confident are you that the worst is behind you?
Yeah. So if I just maybe I'll just quickly recap what we've done with loyalty, and then let Chad talk to the numbers. Under the old loyalty system, we had a number of sort of defined currencies that customers would accumulate through their play. But those, those currencies could be used for shopping. They could be used for free play. They could be used for room nights. But they were essentially not interchangeable. Those benefits, if you didn't use it, then they would lapse. Under the new loyalty program, we have one currency. And so, if you don't want to go shopping, you can use those points to use free play. And that's given, and as we moved into the new world, particularly high-end table game players had accumulated a lot of points, which under the previous restrictions, they could really only use for food and beverage. And there's only so much you can eat. So that has now meant that the customers can use these points for the things that they want to use. And, that's a benefit that we wanted to offer to the customers. And it just had the transition effect of playing down those accumulated balances. Chad, if you can put some numbers on that.
Sure. So, Mark, just to add some more detail on that from a financial perspective. So, what we saw from the launch of the program is roughly around a $13 million additional free play on top of what we would normally see in the program. And so as Matt's pointed out, everyone got new additional casino points on conversion that they're able to use on free play, and they played them through very quickly through November and December. In terms of the cost, the hard costs around the loyalty program, so there's obviously two aspects to it. There's the relaunch costs that have come through the P&L. That's about $3 million worth of hard costs that's come through the P&L, as well as CapEx that hasn't come through the P&L associated with the technology deployments that we've done associated with the new program.
So your question was, are we comfortable that that's behind us? The answer is yes. I mean, we know this is something that we've been tracking very closely, and we'll look at the player behavior on a daily basis. And, based on the fact that now the bulk of the points have been played through and points in and points out are in balance, that gives us confidence that that issue is now behind us.
Great. Thanks very much.
The next question comes from Adam Alexander from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Morning, Matt. Morning, Chad. Matt, I'm wondering if you can give us just a little bit more colour on that trading update. You know, the 11.4% pretty healthy through Jan. Is that a combination of slots recovering, maybe how that Vantage Room is now going, and does that include some normalisation of the sort of premium mass win rates as well?
Premium mass is a relatively small market, but the win rate in our private gaming rooms, so the domestic customers, is in line with our budget and prior period. So there's not a freakish result in here that would inflate the revenue. It's just, you know, unlike in the first period where we, you know, were substantially below the prior period win rate, we're now just running to budget and to the historical experience in private gaming rooms. So it's a fairer representation of what the business really can do. The slots business and the electronic gaming business is recovering, so that's pleasing to see because that's really the driver of profitability, and a lot of it has to do just with the fact that, you know, our hotel rooms are back, and so we now have a much larger capacity to bring in customers and extend their stay by offering them the hotel rooms that they seek, and we didn't have that in the first half. It's a pretty solid full-based recovery.
Yeah. And then just on VIP, I mean, you make some comments that the timing of Chinese New Year is a little bit out, but how are you starting to see, you know, some of your bigger players come back through this Chinese New Year, or are they still sort of, you know, reticent to come to the region?
I think, Adam, we've talked about this in the past before. You know, if you look at our VIP business, you know, we have grown the volume consistently over the last 5-6 years. But over that period, we've also experienced a significant shift. You know, 5 years ago, we had a small number of whales that basically generated the bulk of the revenue. We are now seeing many, many more of the sort of mid-range players. Yes, there's always the odd, you know, very large one that's coming, but the, in every one of those cases, there's a personal reason for why they want to come to Australia and want to have a trip, you know, this time versus next time. So the mix of players is rebalancing clearly and more against that sort of mid-range VIP player. In terms of, you know, who we're seeing showing up and returning, you know, I don't want to go too much into the operational response that we've had to the developments in China, but, you know, we obviously want to be cautious because we just don't have all of the facts on the table right now. We feel comfortable and we are committed to playing absolutely clean and to the rules in all of the markets that we operate in, because that's the only sustainable long-term strategy, we think. And that just means at this point you're not taking any risks by calling on customers you don't know. You don't respond to customers you don't know, and we're just being a lot more cautious. The best thing we can do in this business is, you know, build it up in a diversified, low-risk manner with customers that we feel comfortable, have the means, and the right sources of funds to play at this level.
Mm. And longer term, does that put, I suppose, you know, the way that's moving with a larger number of mid-tier players, does that put pressure on the margins of that business, just given that the cost to serve, you know, each of those players is probably, you know, they expect sort of the same treatment, but they're not turning over as much? Does that sort of see your margins get crimped a little bit longer term?
Mid-range player, I just want to caution you a little bit, you know, what we call mid-range player, most people would think as a, you know, reasonably high-end player. So we're talking about front money of $1 to $5 million. And you're right in your observation that they expect the same level of service when they get to the property. They don't expect the same level of transportation. So the idea that, you know, we now send the jet to pick up a $1 million player when we used to send it for a $20 million player, that doesn't apply. And that's the higher cost to serve is then balanced off by lower commission rates.
All right, yep, that makes sense.
When we look at the profitability by subsegment, you know, this is an attractive part of the business.
Okay, thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Larry Gandler from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just an extension on that last question. In terms of the trading update, I understand VIP would be, of course, affected by Chinese New Year, but to what extent did the timing of Chinese New Year affect the domestic revenue number?
Yeah,
maybe you can kind of give a feel for that.
Yeah, no, it helped. It helped. It absolutely helped because particularly in Sydney, we have a very large Chinese community in our customer group. So there's no doubt that that activation helped. The reason why I think we are happy with the first half was January was good as well. So it wasn't just the fact that we had an early Chinese New Year in February, but January was you know, markedly better than the preceding period. And the markets where we don't have such a large Chinese community also were responding well.
Okay,
But Larry, I grant you that, you know, obviously it's been helpful to have that earlier Chinese New Year in our domestic numbers.
Yep, so if you kind of adjust for that, would you say the growth rate would be normally running about half of what you showed here at 11%, or it's too difficult to even venture a guess at that?
Well, look, I'll tell you this. January was running at more than half of the rate, and the other properties are running more than half the rate. So the number's got to be higher.
Okay, great. All right, and just in terms of the contrast of VIP between Queensland and Sydney, it seems like the profit impact of eroding VIP revenue in Sydney was greater than the profit boost we saw from growing VIP revenue in Queensland. It just seemed a bit disproportionate. I'm not sure if there's any factor in there.
Look, Larry, we've looked at that in some detail, and I have to just ask for all the other people on the call to humor us for a minute. It really comes down to the types of programs that were being in play in the two properties and the winning patterns that we've experienced. So in Sydney, we paid out more commission on lower terms than in because of more revenue share deals in Sydney. And that means relatively, or based on our normalization methodology where we don't adjust for any of that stuff, you know, that means Sydney gets hammered more than Queensland.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep, I get it. Okay, so all right, so it is. It's just an issue with the accounting. All right, that's fine.
Well, it's not really the accounting. It's just that, you know, we don't account.
With the management accounting. Yeah, the management accounting.
Exactly.
Well, and Larry, to be frank, program mix, right? So there's different programs that are operating on the different properties, and where, you know, the programs, where the players are going under what programs will obviously influence the commission rates and the whether they're turnover deals or revenue share deals.
Yeah. Okay, understood. Thanks.
That's why, Larry, just to finish off, that's why we give you the actual numbers by property as well, because that's where you can then see, in reality, how much money did you make.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Don Carducci from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I was wondering if you could explain what portion of VIP play was coming from junket versus the premium direct marketing and whether or not you've seen a shift recently in the source of the play as a result of the Chinese developments.
So, Don, there hasn't been any significant shift in the makeup of VIP play from what we're seeing traditionally. It's always kind of averaged around 75 to 80% of the North Asian volume comes out of the junket play.
Okay, great. And then my second question would be, have you seen an increase in visitation from the loyalty program versus non-loyalty as a result? And when do you expect the timing of that program to be fully up and running to have the most significant impact on the business?
Yeah, on the loyalty, you know, 70% of our domestic revenue comes from customers in loyalty. So the growth that we're seeing now is, you know, disproportionately driven by loyalty customers. Our rate of unrated, we call it unrated business, the cash-only business, is not growing as quickly as the business that we get from our loyalty customers. That's observation number one. And observation number two is, you know, I previously sort of marked our loyalty and CRM capability at, you know, an ungenerous 3.5. We're probably now, in terms of our IT capability and systems capability, at a 5. But we need, you know, this is going to be the biggest focus for us over the next 10 years to continue to refine and improve the way we go about our loyalty and our CRM capability. We now have a better platform. We have a better customer proposition. We now need to incrementally learn how to use it, learn from successful campaigns, tweak the following ones, build additional insights, build additional campaigns. That journey will never finish. But we now have, we feel that we now have a platform that we can build on.
I think just adding to that as well, Matt, the disruption impact in the first half too was probably more around main gaming floor and your unrated play, because they're more around those particular areas than they were in our PGRs as well. So that's been an influencer of visitation in the first half result.
Great, thank you.
The next question comes from Sam Dobson from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, guys. Just a couple of questions. Can you just give us, just on VIP, can you just give us a sense of how VIP turnover progressed in November and December? I mean, I know you've noted that July to October was down 4.2%, November, December was down 27%. Was there any improvement in December, or was it kind of a broadly similar result?
Broadly similar result.
Okay. And can you just remind
me? You know, so just Sam.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the news first broke, it actually took a little bit of while. You know, there were a lot of trips that were booked, and nothing really changed immediately. So it took a little bit of time. People that booked trips still showed up,
mm-hmm.
and so these things are not as binary as you might think. And so therefore, you know, if it takes a bit of time to correct on the way in, it's going to take a bit of time to grip on the way out.
Yeah, sure. No, that makes sense. And can you just remind us what the proportion, so historically, what the proportion of mainland China was in terms of your VIP turnover?
Well, I think we've had an attempt at the AGM to put some numbers around that, but it's not a particularly precise science, because a lot of the high-end players actually have multiple domiciles.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, historically, we would have said that 80% of our business was really coming out of North Asia, which is Hong Kong, Macau, and mainland China. You know, our strategy, stated strategy, is to reduce that dependency, and our bias is obviously to play more, you know, to focus on customers that are lower risk in that mix.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just in terms of just sort of switching a little bit, just in terms of the capex that you've got a pretty strong capex profile going forward, obviously Queen's Wharf, Sydney, etc. Can you just give us a sense of what the return hurdles are, and what we should be thinking retiming of reaching those hurdles?
So, you know, we've highlighted before, you know, and it depends, obviously, Sam, between what's growth capex versus maintenance capex. You know, we're always looking to, obviously, above our cost of capital return on capex, right, which we see somewhere in the low to mid-teen kind of return rates expectation on growth capex. In terms of timing within that, as you see through the presentation, right, we've highlighted some timing on each. So if you look in Sydney, we've highlighted that over the next few years, there's roughly $1 billion of capex going into Sydney. Of that, $500 million is ours. The other $500 million is in a joint venture structure with our Chow Tai Fook and Far East, our partners in Queen's Wharf.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, the timing on the additional tower and timing on some of the developments, such as the Sovereign Room expansion, is dependent on getting approvals from the regular planning authorities within New South Wales and Sydney. So some of the timing on that is unknown at this point in time, but we're aiming for, as an example, sovereign room to be done by FY 2020 and the new tower ideally by 2021. You know, you then look at the Gold Coast, you know, we've highlighted $845 million planned investment within that property, of which $400 million is the new 700-key hotel. I'm just on slide 21 of the pack. So the $445 million we've highlighted previously, and then the new hotel is with Chatai Fukin Far East again of $400 million. We're obviously before the new hotel, 700-key hotel gets done, we complete our six-star hotel that should be done by either late calendar this year or early in 2018. And then our expectation is by FY21 that the new 700-key hotel will be completed. But again, you know, the additional 700-key hotel in the Gold Coast, again, as we've highlighted before, is dependent on pre-sales of the apartments that are in there, and we're likely to start pre-sales over the next 6 months on those apartments.
Right. Okay, and just lastly then, Queensland, so you know, a reasonable result given the disruption. Can you just give us a sense of what trading's been like since the refurb, and I guess if you can tie it to the 11.4% gross revenue growth that you've seen in the 6 weeks?
Yes, so certainly Gold Coast in particular has had a very strong January. We've seen, you know, we highlight elsewhere in the presentation, we've had a good lift in hotel room rates since the hotel refurbishment has been completed.
Yep.
We've been full through January. It's been a very successful trading period. The new F&B outlets have been trading particularly well. So, you know, January was a very pleasing result for the Gold Coast.
The only additional point I just want to make there is, you know, we run food and beverage in our hotels always with an eye to the gaming customer. And, you know, in the Gold Coast, we don't have enough high-quality gaming capacity. And so the key capability that, or the key asset that we're building with the new suite hotel is to have pretty much the best high-end gaming rooms in the country. And so once that comes in stream in about 10 months' time, then I think you'll see the multiplying effect of good F&B, good hotel rooms, with a great gaming room, and that's when we'll be able to really tap into that high-end customer.
Well, and I think, you know, off a small base, Matt, we've seen even in the first half results a good lift in the VIP segment within the Gold Coast based on, you know, the new rooms and,
yeah,
two salons, but, you know, new suites for our guests to stay in there.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay, that's great.
You know what I mean, Sam? It's just that,
yeah,
you know, having a cool hotel room is nice, but you really want to have a cool hotel room with a great gaming room, and that then allows you to attract a great domestic or international gaming customer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Understood.
Thank you.
Once again, if anyone would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. The next question comes from Roland Sandra from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, just had a question around VIP. Just wondering if you've seen any major change in junket liquidity during the period ever since the events in China. We heard commentary last week about tightening in funding transfer of players, but just wondering if that's much of a junket issue or if it was more of a direct VIP issue.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what that. I've heard about that comment as well, but we weren't able to really relate that to any specific changes in regulation. The situation in China has, you know, the government intervention of the last couple of years has tightened capital controls, but that's been in place for a couple of years, and so we've worked in that environment successfully for a couple of years, and you know, we follow the rules that have to be followed. It's fair to say that, you know, the negotiation stance of some of the operators has become a bit more aggressive in light of recent developments. But you look at our book of bad debts or outstanding debts, and you contrast that with the very, very large amounts of money that we had to collect to, you know, to realize that and which we've collected, that kind of gives you a sense that, you know, for the customer that we have and the junkets that we operate in, it is more business as usual, to be honest.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Matt Ryan from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, Matt. I had a question on the OPEX coming in the second half. Should we expect, I guess, a similar level of increase in the second half versus the second half of last year, as you saw in the first half 17 versus first half 16? I understand there's some sort of one-off costs coming through from the loyalty relaunch. So can you just specify what sort of operating expenses you're expecting in the second half?
Look, the second half really will be driven by the activity and the volume that we can see. We will want to spend a little bit more on above-the-line marketing, but it's really activity-driven. We don't, you know, there's a bit of rebranding in the Gold Coast, but it's we've decided to, you know, use that with a pretty light touch and hold back on any major activation until the new gaming facilities have become available. So in the second half, that's not going to be significant. So it's really, you know, and we've built out most of the capability that we needed, wanted to build out in the first half. So it's largely going to be volume related and a little bit extra marketing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Just a final call, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one.
Okay, it looks like there's no more questions coming through. I just want to thank you once again for making the time to dial in, and I look forward to meeting with you one-on-one over the next couple of weeks as we do our rounds. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you so much for your attendance. You may all disconnect.